Guys, sorry for the late re-release. It is, of course, a very busy time at SF Sketchfest, and we had a wonderful opening week. We are looking at the second weekend. I am recording this backstage at the California Academy of Sciences, and I am listening to people have a good time, so I guess that's not the worst thing in the world. This is a re-release of Jen Kirkman's episode. I love Jen. She will be at SF Sketchfest next weekend. That's our closing weekend, and she'll be doing her own show. I Seem Fun, and she will also, the Diary of Jen Kirkman podcast, I should say, and she will also be moderating the Tignataro tribute. So super excited about that. Sorry for all the ambient noise, guys, but I wanted to get this out so that we could release this episode for you guys to re-enjoy or enjoy for the first time. Thanks.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Welcome to the JV Club. I'm here with Jen Kirkman.
Hi.
And I'm really excited to have you all involved in the questions this time around. I don't know why she felt like the best person to do this with, but I just felt confident that she was. And in fact,
oh, thank you.
These are good. These are some good questions that have been asked. So I don't know how much time it's going to take to get through these questions, but I sort of promised you guys in my intro for last week that I would kind of let you guys run the show and just ask these questions, and then we would kind of bounce around from them a little bit. So I don't even know if any of the questions are going to come from me. You know what? There may be some follow-up questions that
yeah.
these questions lead to. But thanks for contributing, you guys. I'm going to send each of you $50. I feel that's what your questions are worth. And please don't expect any actual money because I don't have any of your addresses.
That's the only reason why, because you don't have their addresses.
Yeah. otherwise, you guys would be getting maybe like a savings bond. I'm not sure I've ever seen a savings bond. I guess I will say, we'll just put this. Well, nobody asked, like, I think everybody assumed that I would ask the sort of cursory geographical questions where we can sort of place you where you are, time and place, before we launch into these questions. So I should probably take care of that little bit of housekeeping.
That's fine.
So Jen, let's hear from you where you are from.
I'm from Needham, Massachusetts, which is a kind of a wealthy suburb. New money outside of Boston, Massachusetts. We were not the wealthy people in town.
How did you come to be there if you didn't have the money?
My dad's a greenskeeper, so he's like Bill Murray in Caddyshack, but whereas Bill Murray in Caddyshack was studying to be the head greenskeeper, my dad was the head greenskeeper. So he was more the guy. We don't have to get into Caddyshack references, but
we certainly can.
But so actually when my dad took that job, the house came with it. Like my parents didn't have to buy a house.
I like this. So, this almost sounds vaguely Dickensian.
Oh my God, it kind of does.
Oh my God. See? It's like Sabrina.
Yeah.
Like you lived above the garage because your father was a chauffeur.
But yeah, so whoever is the greenskeeper at that place, the house is part of your salary.
And when you say greenskeeper, for those of you who haven't seen Caddyshack, I don't know who you would be. It's specific to like a country club golf course.
Yeah, golf course. Like, he was the golf course superintendent. He managed the golf club and the entire course and all kinds of things. And so anyway, yeah, so that's how we kind of came to live in it's like any other town. There's rich, poor, working class, whatever. But on the whole, it's a very progressive, affluent, nice place to live.
Yeah. And I think the East Coast seems like it has more, like Massachusetts, Vermont, Connecticut, those areas has more of those little township pockets where there really is sort of a preponderance of one type of person versus like where, you know, I'm from Arizona and sort of, it's just like everybody's all in one weird city or whatever.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, being more segregated in that way.
Yeah.
So that seems very East Coast to me.
Yeah. It's very Massachusetts-y. Segregated's a good word for it.
Sorry to say, but
no, it's true. We used to have black kids bust in
yeah.
from the inner city or whatever, you know. And I don't know if that, I can't remember if ultimately that was a program that people enjoy. Like, I don't remember if that was good for anybody, the black or right. the white kids. Like, I don't remember what the overall, like, that's bad or that's good, but
yeah.
I hope that doesn't sound racist. I just can't remember. I remember there was a critique of that type of thing happening, but I can't remember any of the details around it. That's a great story. But anyway, yeah, it was a very segregated place. I think there was one black kid that lived in town.
Okay. And so, and you have sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Is it you and three?
I have two older sisters, three girls total. Yeah. My sisters are so much older than me that I was an only child living at home since age 7.
Got it.
So yeah, they were either in college or like off, like getting married. They're like 10 and 14 years older than me. So
gotcha.
Yeah. So I kind of was mostly an only child.
Okay. And so we've established that your high school was, there was a mix of ethnicities, but it wasn't necessarily organic in the sense that the community itself didn't.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There was no more like in middle school, like did the different ethnicities like hang out with each other. But then in high school, everyone was just in their own little group. Like there was not really much mixing of anything except the one black kid in town hung out with the freaks. That's what I was called in high school. So
you were a freak.
Yeah.
I don't remember being classified by someone else with a name. And I feel like everything I've assigned to myself, I've had to assign after the fact.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Oh, I was goth. Like, but at the time, I don't remember anyone saying, "You're goth, Janet Varney."
Right, right.
That's what you are.
I can't remember. We were called the freaks, but then we appropriated it because we were really proud of it. And so that's what it was. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And were you a good student? I'm looking to see if any of these questions are covered in the, I love that I said, I'm not going to ask any questions. And I've
you're like, before we get to the questions. I was a good student, but I was, what I loved and it came easy. So I did it. What I didn't love and sort of half loved, I did as much as I could to get by and then just like coasted on luck or instinct.
Could not be more similar.
Yeah. Same. And then stuff I hated, I was like never going to use math. So I'm barely paying attention. I have ADD, cheated. Undiagnosed. Oh, you cheated. I just took D's. I basically told my parents like, I'm never going to be good at math. You know, I'm not a bad kid, but I'm going to get some D's. And they're like, no big, you know,
whatever. At least you were honest about it. I was I just felt like, I was so worried about letting people down. Everybody knows this who's listened to even one other podcast, but
I have that with other things, but I've heard some stuff. I'm similar in that way. Like I'm afraid of letting people down, but if it's stuff I don't want to do, then I don't care who's let down. I just can't make myself do it.
That's great.
So I walked out of my SATs cause I couldn't concentrate. Like the tests are not set up for my mind.
Same.
Yeah. Like if you give me a multiple choice, I overthink it and I'm like, well, they're probably asking because of this.
Yeah.
I just walked out.
Most alarming is IQ tests. Like I don't know. Yeah. When I remember being given those tests and just thinking, how could anyone, like, even just taking puzzle pieces and making them look like the design, I would get so distracted by other things. Like, what is this made out of? Like, just so not able to focus.
See, to me, that means you have a high IQ, but I'm not in charge of these tests. But
And to be honest with you, I have absolutely no idea what my IQ ever is.
Like, I've
is
never taken
was.
One.
I don't remember. Whatever. It was probably kept a closely guarded secret to my parents because I've never known.
I don't think I've ever taken one.
I just assume mine's low.
All I know is I got a horrible, I think I only got like an 850 on my SATs. I did not even take them. I was like, who cares?
Yeah.
I think I was already in college at that, like already got into school at that point, knew I wanted to go to like a theater school. It was like, this is so dumb. And when people my age still talk about their SAT scores, I'm like, what is wrong with you?
I don't
know
what I got.
Well, 1600's the best.
I'm sure I didn't get that. I probably did all right.
Yeah. I'm sure you did great. Right. I think I did well in the English part, but I don't know.
What did your mom do? Did your mom work or is she a mom?
She didn't work for the first like, oh God, this was terrible. This, what I'm about to say, but she didn't work at all until I was 10. And then she wanted to start working and she wanted to work in a school somehow. And like the easiest way in was to volunteer first. And so her volunteer job was recess disciplinarian when I was in fifth grade. Well, the worst 3 years of my life were fifth, sixth, and seventh grade. Luckily only fifth grade my mom was, but she was the person on the playground who would tell everyone to stop screaming, stop running.
I.e. she was the fun killer.
Yeah. And then in the cafeteria, we'd had these three lunch ladies, not the lunch ladies who serve lunch, but we would call what my mom did, the lunch lady, which was the disciplinarian people.
Yeah.
So they would get on microphones and be like, be quiet. Like there was always this level of having to be quiet for
and
some reason.
And everyone knew that was your mom?
Everyone knew that was my mom.
Were they like, Kirkman,
you know,
your mom's a drag.
It's so funny because I was mortified by it, but the people that made fun of me for so many other things that I brought on myself.
Listen, we don't even have time to get into making fun of your mom.
It had nothing to do with her, but it was just an added, this blows. It was like more for me, like going to school was like my favorite thing to do because I could be me. You know, like my friends, some girls I know were singing Like a Virgin on the playground, and my mom pulled me by the ear away from the girls and was like, you're not singing that song. Do you know what that means? Oh, no. And I didn't know what it meant until she made me think it might have meant something. So, you know, take those rosary beads off, you know, like that kind of thing. So any kind of like little thing you might do at recess because you know your parents can't see you, I did not have that for just that 1 year.
Yeah.
And it was pretty upsetting.
That was a period of time that I was the least happy to be going to school, partially because I was being bullied, but also I was just a mess.
Oh yeah, I was being bullied too, age. Like by boys physically.
Ugh, I was being by girls. I still have a scar on my shoulder from a fight I got into.
Oh my god,
I'm so not a fighter. And a different time, this girl kicked me in the stomach and knocked the wind out of me. It's horrible.
What did teachers do about it? Did
nothing.
You find they were nothing?
I have no memory of anyone ever
coming to
aid. The one time anything did happen that teachers were aware of was actually on the bus that I took to get to school, which I was a part of a magnet program. So I had to take one bus to get to one school, and then you transfer at that school to go onto your school bus.
Gotcha.
So my neighborhood bus came, picked me up, but I was the last stop before getting to that school. And there was a girl, I guess, who was like one of the first stops on the route that decided that she hated me for some reason. But again, of course, how can you even know when you reach some total of experiences with someone is like 3 minutes on a bus.
Yeah, yeah.
But she clearly hated me. And so I would wait to get on the bus. And then when I would get on, the bus would be basically full. And she coached all of the kids on the full bus to like put their knees in the aisle so I couldn't walk. I would have to like stand near the bus driver, who never said anything to the kids. I think the bus driver was afraid of the kids.
Yes.
Which, if you guys have listened to the Natasha Leggero episode, maybe you know why, because she apparently bullied her own bus driver.
I heard that.
And so I got to the point where I dreaded so much getting on the bus because they would also like yell things at me and stuff that I just started pretending like I was sick. And but my parents knew that I wasn't sick, so then they took me to a doctor, and then it was like finally the story came out, and the principal of her school and the principal of my school somehow got involved with each other, and she had to like come up and apologize to me and stuff.
Good.
But I was afraid that she was going to be even worse.
Did
after
that?
But
yeah,
to be honest with you, I think she was so scared that she was nice to me after that.
Yeah, you just need to scare them that they're going to get in trouble. What was it like? What? Not that you were doing anything, but what was their reason for being mean to you?
I don't know.
I mean, I'm sure we all know now. She was either jealous of you or wanted to be your friend or saw something.
That's a lovely thought, but it might not be that. It might have just been that.
People
freak.
Also might be horrible people. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I would say probably the reason that she hated me was just, I was just someone she could hate. I don't think it was, I don't think I should feel special and why, or that she felt envious. I think she probably had a shit home life. And like, that's how you end up maybe on either side. Like you can have a shitty home life and get picked on still, or you can be the person who picks on. And I just never made it to that happened to me so young that I just never wanted to bully anyone because I was too aware of how it felt.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But enough about me.
Can't imagine bullying someone.
There's a couple of questions in here. I didn't create like an order to any of this, but this should be a fun question. I'm gonna ask Mike Gray's question first. What was the first album you ever bought?
Oh, well, here's the thing. Music was always a huge part of my life since I was like three. So, it's a hard question for me to answer because it.
Yeah.
My sisters, when they left me all their 8-tracks, Zeppelin, The Who, whatever. So I was listening to that since I was like 4. And then my parents would always have Oldies 103 on in the kitchen, which was like, then I heard all the like 50s songs and Elvis and all that stuff. So I loved that. And then we had the albums in the dining room, and my earliest memory is like age 4, just putting on Sgt. Pepper and laying on the floor and listening to it all the way through and turning it over and listening to the other side. And that's what I liked doing. I didn't go to nursery school. I would lay on the floor and listen to Sgt. Pepper. And then in fifth grade, in kindergarten, I would run home from school just to put the albums on and lay on the floor. So I didn't buy those, but that's the first music I listened to, was Zeppelin and Beatles and Elvis and Johnny Cash and all that kind of stuff. So
do you remember? Do you remember, first of all, wildly impressive that you had such a great fleshed out musical experience. I kind of did too. My dad was a huge, huge music nerd. So he had tons of albums and he had reel to reel tapes.
Oh my God.
So he showed me how to run the reel to reel and listen to like Old Who and the Kinks and stuff like that. And I used to road trip with him all the time. So he would play like awesome music from when I was really little, going ghost towning with him. And, I'm always so fascinated by the girls who've done the podcast who it just wasn't important to them. I'm so amazed to find out what was important, because I feel like there would be such a huge hole.
I'm so freaked out by people.
Had all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And I didn't know what year it was or what was happening. And disco, the Bee Gees were another big thing for me too at that age. So it was like, I didn't know. I mean, it was like 1980, but I didn't know what was coming out in 1980. Like, I wasn't necessarily listening to the radio station. Like, my parents had the oldies on and then I had all these albums and things. I just thought that was all happening at that
same
time.
Yeah. There's a timelessness to that. That's like, oh,
I didn't know what was happening.
I even thought the Monkees were my contemporaries because they played reruns on Nickelodeon.
Me too.
I thought they were that age.
I thought when I was little watching it, and then I remember like 1980, John Lennon died. My mom had to explain, no, the Beatles had been broken up. Like, I didn't even know it was, but the first album I actually purchased with my own money was, I went to this place called the Music Center and I bought the 1981 hit list. It was just a record of like the top 12 hits of that year.
Okay.
And I didn't even like a lot of the songs on it. It was like, one was the Gap band, You Dropped a Bomb on Me, which I loved.
Okay.
And Jenny, 8675309 was on there.
That's some good stuff. 1981 hit list.
Okay. Yeah. And then after that, I think The Song Remains the Same was the next album I bought, because my sister had it on 8-track and it was like skipping. So I was like, I'll just buy the album.
Got it.
Then maybe as like third grade came around, I started to realize there was current music happening. And so then I would buy, I forget, The Clash, Rock the Casbah's on. I forget the name of that album, but I bought that in third grade. And then Boy George and George Michael. And I did like pop music as well. So it was like Michael Jackson, George Michael, Madonna, all that kind of stuff, like kind of starting in third and fourth grade for me.
I guess I remember that stuff too. I think that the top 40 songs that had the strongest impact on me that I remember best, honestly, are things that would play at roller rinks. Like, because everybody was having roller skating parties.
So
I have such specific, like, I definitely remember Bryan Adams' Heaven, because it was like the greatest song to like couples skate to.
Oh, God,
like,
couples skate. I never did that.
Oh, it was... I was always way taller than the boy, so it would be like, and then just the feeling of holding like a soft, clammy hand.
Oh my God, I've never ever I've never once in my life held a boy's hand and roller skated.
Oh, it's hard. I feel like I fell every single time.
And I don't want people to be like, I'll do that. I'm fine.
You're not inviting.
No.
If you had, this is a follow up to my Grace question and that's a great answer that you gave. Do you have, because you were kind of raised in that environment and music was so important to you, do you remember a time in your teens when you just were blown away by something? Like, I was talking to April Richardson about her first, you know, her first experience at 12 or 13 hearing Morrissey, and it stayed with her ever since.
Yeah.
And my version of that was a Depeche Mode.
Like,
I turned a corner where I was like, okay, this isn't about anything anybody else has shown me except for this one person who has acquainted me with this thing that now is like all I want to think about, my new life.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt the transition from eighth grade to freshman year in high school.
Same.
My neighbor made me, a bunch of people just kind of showed up and were like, here's what we do now. You know, like my best friend Meredith since kindergarten got me into Sinead O'Connor.
Yep.
And then got me into Public Enemy. And then my neighbor, Matt, this like older punk rock kid that lived down the street, my parents didn't let me hang out with them, but they were not. At the same time, my dad would smoke cigarettes with Matt on our front porch, but I wasn't allowed to hang out with Matt.
That's
so funny. It made no sense. But he made me a mixtape, and it was just like, oh, the Sex Pistols, the Ramones, like things I need to know about, like the Dead Kennedys, the whatever. And so then I just got into kind of punkish music. And that was like my mind blew open. I wasn't even trying to like it. I just loved it. It kind of reminded me of like 50s music in a way, which I'd already had a taste for.
Sure.
But so that was all like the beginning of the beginning. But then like, it was really the first time my friend Shauna played me the Smiths in 87, I think it was, or 88. And I was like, first I was like, I hate this. And then I loved it. Like, and it was like this really depressing song, Sing Me to Sleep. I don't want to wake up on my own anymore. And I just related to that. Like, oh my God, I do feel that way. I am like super angsty and depressed. And like, that blew my mind. I felt like I had a friend. I felt like I had someone who understood me. I felt like I had a way out. Like when he would sing about this town is stupid and someday you're going to live somewhere else. Like I was like, yes. And I kind of look, I just started, my mind split and I saw everyone else's other, like, oh, you people are so entrenched in being a teenager or preteen that you're like caught up in this. And like, I'm caught up in what I thought was like the drama of real life. Like, I know I'm going to get out of here someday.
Yeah.
Like you guys are so, cause that's why I feel like I didn't have a bad time in high school because I didn't care. I mean, it just, I didn't want anyone's approval. I had Morrissey. And then the first time I heard The Cure, I'd heard Cure songs like the poppy ones, but when Disintegration came out,
album came out.
What a perfect, that was so beautiful and so depressing.
And really, yeah. And speaking of like, I mean, a lot of the music that you've described, I mean, obviously like, I feel like I grew up with Pink Floyd also. And their albums are so iconic and they are these sort of epic journeys. Every single one of their albums feels like does feel like you're watching a movie or that you're experiencing this like, you know, storytelling experience. But that was all stuff that like that my dad had, you know, that I was acquainted with and I associated with that. And Disintegration was the first album where I just felt like exactly what you're saying. Like, this is for me.
Yes. This
is for me. I don't have to share it with my family. I have like a couple of friends.
And it's happening now.
It's happening right now. It's fresh. It just came out. I mean, the first strains of Plainsong starting that album out, like
I just got chills.
I just got chills.
The chimes.
I
wish I could sing it, but I'm like, it's in my head, that burst at the beginning. Yeah.
It's like the most sad, beautiful fairy tale, like not of this world.
To this day, the guitar in The Cure can like pull at my heartstring. It plucks at
me. Pictures of You. Like, and that became a hit, but it always felt with pretty much every song on that album, maybe with the exception of Love Song, cause that was so overplayed. Mm-hmm. I always felt protective of it played out of context of the rest of the album. Like if I heard it on the radio or something, I would be like, don't play Pictures of You in between a Duran Duran song and a Howard Jones song.
No, it has to go
like, you gotta
in
be
the right
in
order
it and like sort of honor it in that way. And
I loved it. Like it's the end of the world and some cold, like the cold that you were dead. Then she smiled for a second. Why do I don't know why I was so obsessed with death, so obsessed with death, and so obsessed with love, and so I was so romantic
so
and angsty.
Much.
Yeah, I felt I like can't believe I didn't. It is shocks me to this day that I didn't become like a fucking drug addict because I was so overwhelmed with emotion and feelings that I had nowhere to put them, and I can't believe I didn't turn to anything to numb it. And I did,
unfortunately.
I wish I almost had been, because
by the way,
how did I
help.
Make it,
just
it out
makes
alive.
You feel things more in inappropriate ways.
That's true. I was so so raw all the time. I mean, just, but I will never. I guess I don't think I've changed that much, except I know when and where it's appropriate.
Same.
Kind of.
Right.
Kind of.
Right.
But I'm such a raw nerve, but I don't mind it. Like, that's just who I was, you know? Yeah. But like, yeah, I don't even know if all that was just being a teenager. That also might have been an organic to my personality that was just starting to develop. But
yeah, yeah, I think it is. I think it's, and maybe it's both. I mean, maybe everybody kind of goes through some sort of hormonal rage of, you know, that kind of thing. But
well, I know they asked that question in High Fidelity, like, did the music make me this way, or was I like that? But I look at my friends who got me into that music and I go, they're not still hanging on to this. Like, I'm not still hanging on to it, but like, they're normal people with kids and husbands, and jobs and all that. And I don't know if they heard that song, would they fall on the floor and just want to lay there right. still? Like, I don't know. I haven't asked them, but.
And it's so amazing how visceral those, like, I can't just, there are certain things that I've carried through with me that I still listen to that just feel timeless, that I can associate with the person I was when I first heard it a little mm-hmm. bit, but I also have kind of brought it into my life now. But I have to say, I have to be in a really specific mood to listen to Disintegration, because the memories I have and the person I feel like I am when I put that album on.
Yeah.
It's like, I got to be ready for that. Yeah. I got to be ready to kind of go back to that place, because it impacted and imprinted in such a specific way.
Yeah, you're right. If we were like driving to lunch and that was on, I couldn't really like...
We'd be like, listen, we need to pull over.
And I think the next thing after that was Nirvana. By the way, I can't forget that. That was like, that was because the gothy, angsty sadness was... I also had an inner rage that was just out of control. And I think the rage really showed up when I was a kid. I was a very... like into justice. And like when I was bullied, I fought back. I fought boys. I beat the shit out of them. And I was very scrappy. And then that kind of went away and I got very depressed. And then that was just a little mask. And then the rage came back, and it came back right when Nirvana came around. And I was like, thank God everyone is angry. You know what I mean? And then, but actually before them, I'd also heard Hole's record too that year, their first record. And I was like, oh my God, girls are mad too. Like, and then I got into L7 and the Lunatics and all these just screaming girls. And that kind of was more my senior year in high school. And that's kind of who I carried out and continued to be throughout college. Like the Smiths and the Cure will always be like family to me. Mm-hmm. Like I love you guys and I'll listen to you and like you make me normal. But then I think I just went full rage after that.
Yeah.
And then... That's interesting. That's probably where the stand-up comes from.
Yeah, it's funny. I had a friend who loved Nirvana so much, and she was kind of my dearest friend when they hit the scene. And I think I felt like I had this like absurd sense of loyalty to my friendships, where if someone claimed a band before I could, I sort of just let that happen. And so I actually I was like, oh, so, like, she's probably listening to this. I was like, oh, Sarah got Nirvana. Like, she loved Nirvana.
That's how I
she
feel about Depeche Mode.
She got them. And I don't know what my version of that would be other than that I was, I guess, because I did feel angry. But it's funny because when I think about how angry I was, I associate it more with like the films that I was obsessed by.
Oh.
Rather than, although I was into like Ministry and Skinny Puppy, which is pretty angry sounding. Yeah. But I was never into like, I never really got into like Nine Inch Nails, and I never really got into Nirvana, strangely enough. But like I was obsessed by A Clockwork Orange. I was obsessed even by Silence of the Lambs when it came out.
Oh yeah. I can't watch that stuff.
I can't now,
so funny.
But at the time,
yeah.
I clearly was like fascinated by like angry male figures who hurt people, which you know what I mean? So I wasn't listening to angry music necessarily.
Right. You had it out
time,
in another way.
Somehow I was just fixating on like these, I guess, like bad guys.
Well, it's funny because I think Nirvana too had that perfect amount of anger, but like the same poetic sadness of like Morrissey and all that kind of stuff.
Introspective. It was a good combination.
But you brought up an interesting thing that like is such a subtle but important thing, that like you do feel like self-conscious even within your own peer group of doing it wrong. Like I had the same thing. My friend Heather loved Depeche Mode so much, was so crazy for them, that I felt like I was copying her stuff. I liked them too much too. She didn't need me to be into them just like she was. Like, so we all kind of had our own thing. And even among the weird kids, I was always like, am I weird enough? Am I, oh, I don't want to call myself a freak in front of my freaky friends, because they'll be like, no, you're not. Like there was so much like, oh, am I doing this right?
That's interesting. She claimed Depeche Mode. Yeah, I guess I got Depeche Mode because I did like Depeche Mode maybe more than anybody else. Mike, great question. Let's go into a couple of different people asked about books, which seems like a fun segue of music. Will Stegman asked, what was your favorite book as a teen and does it still hold up? And I'm also going to fold in two others, which were specific, which I think for me anyway, are way preteen. But Stephanie Simons wanted to know, which one are you? Are you There, God? It's Me, Margaret. Or Then Again, Maybe I Won't.
Mm.
And Texas Anarchist wanted to know what your favorite Judy Blume book to whack off was.
Oh.
And younger listeners, I'm sorry, but that is just what someone asked.
That's
so you
funny.
Don't have to answer that as specifically as he's asked it. But Well, I liked the Judy Blume. So those are the three book questions. You can answer any and all of them.
All right. Well, I'll go linear. I loved Then Again, Maybe I Won't.
I did.
Because
too.
I was the masturbating since I was very
too.
Young.
Me
like,
too.
Really young. Yes. I really was doing that since I was a kid. And I thought, I didn't even know what I was doing. I didn't know it was sexual. I just thought it was like, why would you not?
Yeah.
Have, it's like having sugar or something.
Exactly.
Like, why would you not do this?
Yeah.
So when I read Then Again, Maybe I Won't, I was like, oh, but there wasn't a girl version of it. And the girls got the period book. And I didn't relate because I didn't get my period till I was 16 because I was underweight. And I just want to say that I hate when people act like being underweight isn't as traumatic as being overweight, because I think we look at it now like Megan Fox would be like, I was scrawny and a nerd and underweight. Like I didn't end up, you know, staying underweight. Like now to keep a weight, I have to fucking work at it. And right. So it was traumatic with kind of no payoff. If that makes any sense. Like, I really was like, had to get these tests because my doctor was like, you might have leukemia, like weird things. I just looked like I had AIDS as a kid. Like it was just awful. I have a picture. I should have sent you that picture. I had these dark circles under my eyes and I just was really way too skinny. And it was like from maybe I stopped being that scrawny when I was like 15, but I didn't get my period and I was in ballet class every day and the girls were developing and like, I was so stupid that I didn't realize like they were envious of me because, you know, when you dance, it does look a little better if you're scrawny, but I felt like a nerd and like a idiot and they were like getting boobs and hips. And I really admired that. People would talk about their periods. I actually talked about this on stage for the first time the other night that when a couple of my friends got their periods, I was so jealous that I just went, oh yeah, I've had mine for a while. Like just to take it away from them. Like it was so awful.
Yeah.
So I didn't feel like a woman and I would like stuff my bra and it was like every day just sitting there unable to concentrate in school because all I'm thinking is I'm not like anyone else and like something's wrong with me and I don't feel
and in
sexy.
In such a private way, you know, that's
yeah.
a different kind of feeling like displaced than than the more kind of public ways. It's so intimate to feel like, you know.
Yeah, and yeah, and that's why I didn't like the Judy Blume book because I related to her waiting for her period, but then she got it at like an age appropriate time. So it's like, why don't fuck this? Like I hated it. So and I also
how
didn't like
she.
The yeah, that the girls didn't seem to have any sexuality until there was another one like Tiger Eyes or something.
Yeah. I think I think I was out of Judy Blume phase by then, but I remember people talking about.
Yeah. That was like a sexy book, I think, but it was more like her and a guy. Like, I don't think she was masturbating. Anyway, yeah. So that's my relationship to that. And then in high school, the books I really loved, I liked Wuthering Heights because I was a big fucking ball of drama.
Yeah.
I loved plays. I really did like Oscar Wilde. I liked anything he wrote.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah. And I liked in high school, I did go through a Catcher in the Rye phase, but I didn't read it too many times. I just read it once and found it life-changing and then got into J.D. Salinger's other short stories, which I liked better.
Yeah.
And then I liked, I can't remember. Oh, I liked, what is her name that wrote The Lottery?
Shirley Jackson.
Shirley Jackson. I liked that. And I liked Flannery O'Connor a lot. That was kind of the stuff I remember them giving us in high school.
Yeah. I remember so well and I cherish so much the books that I read for school. They kind of got, in my mind, they've kind of got it figured out. Like they give people good books to read.
Yeah. I'm so impressed that they did that. And
they stay with you like To Kill a Mockingbird. Like,
you can't argue
with that.
That's one of the greatest books ever.
You probably have to read it two or three times in different classes and there's a reason for it. And you find something new in every single one. And even The Great Gatsby and those are really good books. And I feel like it's a time in your life when, again, you're sort of, you're so open. It's like you're just this porous, open sponge. I mean, kids are too, but when you kind of take the porousness and add the hormonal stuff to it, I feel like the stuff that's getting in is getting in fiercely in a way that even like good school books. Like that was the first time in my junior year, someone, one of my teachers, Mr. Mackey, who was a dear friend of my dad's. My dad was my senior English teacher, by the way.
That's weird.
So that was weird. But also very normal because I knew going in that I was going to have him eventually.
Right.
But Mr. Mackey introduced us. That was like the poetry heavy year in English. And so it was Dylan Thomas. And I became obsessed with Dylan Thomas.
He drank
himself to death. He's like the Morrissey of poetry, Dylan Thomas.
I was obsessed with poetry, but didn't know what to read because we didn't get poetry in school.
Man.
So I'm jealous.
Oh,
I just found
I'm
like
send you some poems.
Yeah. I just found like I think it was like Oscar Wilde and Dorothy Parker. It was like the only poetry I knew, or prose or whatever, you know.
That's
but
still awfully, yeah.
It's still good, but I didn't get any. I didn't know about any of the dark, like I drank myself to death people. Yeah. I didn't know about that.
Oh, Dylan Thomas. the thing that I love about him, and I know no one, this is about you, but I knew what this was going to happen. There are some guests where I'm like, I'm going to let them do all the talking, but I knew that you and I have been sitting on this and wanting to connect for so long about this stuff that I knew I was going to talk your ear off. I was obsessed by Ray Bradbury, and I hated that people were like, oh, you're a sci-fi nerd. I'm like, no, Ray Bradbury's books are not what you think they are.
Yeah. I don't think of that as sci-fi at all. Ships, yeah.
But they're like the most intense, beautiful humanity, like horror, but based on kind of what our real fears are. And they're just so contemplative. And like,
I think I remember reading a Ray Bradbury in high school that really affected me, but I can't remember the title.
I mean, of course, you know, people know Fahrenheit 451. They sort of know like the, or they think of, you know, the Illustrated Man stuff that's been made into films, but his book Dandelion Wine is not even about anything science fiction-y. It's just a beautiful, beautifully written book. And, it's still one of my favorite.
I'll have to read it. I've never read that.
It's so good. So guys, those were great book questions. I'm going to jump into, okay, well, we haven't really talked about relationship-y stuff yet. Mm-hmm. And Jason McCraw wants to know, what is the funniest relationship you had? I mean, that could be interpreted in different ways, but did you...
Funny.
Yeah. I mean, was there like, oh, I guess because you're funny now. So maybe did you
I was have, so intense in high school. There was nothing
there was
funny.
No humor.
Every relationship was so life or death. It was so dramatic and everything lasted 10 seconds.
Yeah.
I was a virgin in high school, but I wasn't a prude. I just had an irrational fear of getting pregnant, but I hooked up with a ton of cute and awesome guys. And, it was the best.
Would you like write notes to each other? And were they in your school or were they people outside?
Oh yeah, all in my school. Yeah. I had no like reality outside of school. My first love was this kid, Rod, who was, I met in 9th grade. He was in 10th grade. He was just like scummy and skinny and wore like crazy boots and had like permanent marker on his hands all the time. And he would like vandalize the school. He was the best. Nice. And just a real fucking weirdo, and like kind of was not emancipated from his parents literally, but like could basically use the basement as his own apartment and like never had to see his parents and just did anything. And so his basement door is always open, so you just walk into his place. And like we had our first kiss watching Rock and Roll High School by the Ramones, and it was the best.
Great.
But then I was like very self-conscious because I didn't have boobs yet, so I was like A cup minus -2, you know, and I just thought that that was important to guys, and I don't really know if he cared, but I was so insane about it that I wouldn't let him touch me even though I was dying to go further. And I think he was kind of frustrated, like, you know, guys are insecure too, but it didn't dawn on me until like I was an adult, like, oh, maybe he was like, well, she doesn't like me, you know.
Yeah.
And so then my dad was like, I don't want you hanging out with that kid. And then, of course, I would sneak over to his house anyway. And then my dad one time just let himself into the basement.
Ooh.
And dragged Rod off of me.
Ooh.
And then I was in big trouble. So I could really never see him again, except at school or running into him. But like, even if I hung out with him at night, it was like I had to go out with my friends and then like sneak off with him or whatever. But
which, by the way, your parents unknowingly created an even more melodramatic and perfect sort of like, oh my God, I desperately want to see this guy because I can't see him kind of thing, right? I'm assuming.
Yes. I mean, I loved him forever, but we never really even went that far because I was afraid and whatever. But then there was like the unrequited love of Adam Kirkland, who didn't like me back. He kind of looked like a little mini Robert Smith.
Did he sit like behind or in front of you in classes because of your names?
I wanted him to sit near me in homeroom, but he didn't. I don't know why we weren't in the same homeroom. But
I forgot about homeroom for a second until you just said that.
Yeah, it's such a weird thing.
Homeroom. What was that even?
Just to like get you all there and calm down. It was like yes! A reading room. I don't know. Just like calm you down for
right?
10 minutes.
Homeroom.
But he was in my group of weirdos that I hung out with, and I always liked him. And my friend Terry got really close with him because she was dating a guy that was his best friend. And I wrote a note to him and had her give it to him. And he just said, she's too loud. I don't like her. I don't like her that way. But
too loud.
Thank God something in me was like, fuck you then. I'll find someone who likes loud girls. Like, fuck off.
Good for you.
But I didn't say that. I was devastated.
Yeah.
And I hated myself for being loud. But part of me, and this is again why Nirvana saved me. Then you get the Sassy magazine with Kurt and Courtney on the cover. You go, someone likes loud, obnoxious people. You know what I mean? Like, there's like, that's when music always came in and like made me feel better. And then like, or Morrissey would sing something about, you know,
yeah,
something, and I would just feel better. But it's
side
like,
note, maybe you can help me get Jane Pratt on the podcast, because I have tweeted her and not heard back. But I'm
I don't know her at all.
Jane Pratt, like, come on.
I don't know her at all.
Everybody, she, you guys have heard me maybe talk about this. I think I might have talked about it on Christina's episode, but Sassy Magazine, it comes up with a lot of women from our age range, because it was like a really cool magazine that made us feel
better.
Cool.
Yeah. But I think the most dramatic thing, and then there was always like guys that like we would make out and be good friends and we liked each other, but whatever. But I didn't really have a boy till like in high school. My best friend, I won't say her name because she's still in my life, and this was actually a very hard time for us, like even later in life. But my best friend, this girl, was dating this guy, and they were like in love, and I never even thought I was attracted to him. Like, he was just my good friend. But then she kind of broke up with him or did something and just kind of decided to see some other people or whatever. But I think she had lost her virginity to him, and she was very like, it was the love of her life and always will be. And I think wanted it to work out with him, but like, you just don't go out with that person if you're her best friend. But I wasn't a jerk or like slutty or anything. She really kind of disappeared from his life for a little while, was hanging out with different dudes, and he and I just became good friends. And then we were in a band together. And so there was a lot of hanging out in the basement, and I really like got to know him. It was like, I've never been attracted to him until I knew him. And he really felt like kind of like a soulmate to me, like in a way that, if it makes any sense, when I look back on him and my best friend, like they had a very, not surface, I'm not putting it down, but I actually realized like on paper, technically he and I made more sense in a weird way. It just kind of happened that way. And so we grew together while they were growing apart, and we would, I mean, really, we're like in love and, you know, very physically involved. And so I just thought like, I wouldn't sleep with him though, because I thought like that one boundary, like I can't do that to my friend. I don't know. I can't like do that. So, but
and did she have any knowledge that this was going on?
No, it was going on for a few months, but, he asked me to the prom, and I'm like, I can't go with you, because that was always her dream, you know? And she said, you know, I'm still going to go to the prom with him, even though we're not together, because we made a promise to each other. So I said, you have to go with her, and I'll ask my friend who's in college to just come back and go with me as a friend. Well, I'll go. But he's like, it's stupid. I don't want to. You don't want to. Why can't we just? And I'm like, I can't. Yeah. So then we all went together. I don't think she had any idea, but he was starting to get frustrated. Like, either you're with me or you're not, you know, like, and then she did find out one night, because she came to where I was working and like yelled at me. And then I was like,
oh, that feeling. Oh, it's so stressful. So stressful.
I like barely remember it, because it was so horrible. But I think I just, instead of like dealing with her, just was like, forget it then. We're not friends then, because I didn't want to deal with her. But it wasn't so much like I choose him over her. Then I think nothing happened with anybody. Like, everybody fell apart. And then he and I, like, throughout college would still like get together and stuff. But then he fell in love with someone who's, he's now married, kids and stuff. But it was just one of those things where it was such a major person in my life. It was like one of the first guys I ever really could cry in front of or say, hey, I have this family problem or whatever. Like, it was the first real relationship I ever had where like someone's really seeing me for who I am and really appreciating it and not judging and being patient. Like, that kind of thing was, that was like, see, this guy is what the funniest thing was. There's nothing funny. It was all so intense. But I think like the funniest thing maybe was this guy, Adam, that I always had a crush on, that said I was too loud. Like, I went to see The Cure at this huge stadium, and he ended up being in the seat in front of me. And then he called me the next day just to talk about the concert. And I'm like, why do you call someone that has a crush on you to talk about the concert? And then he just gets off the phone. And it's like, and I'm like, why do you have to?
So weird.
Yeah, it was so weird. So like, that's the only thing I can think of that's funny.
What did
funny.
That mean?
Yeah.
But listen, that's what's great about these questions, is that they open up to other things that maybe aren't like what the intention of the question was. But that was a beautiful story. My heart just broke for you, all three of you, because I remember, I mean, I didn't. Yeah, that feeling of loyalty. And I had a girlfriend who dated a guy that I had dated, not even really that seriously, but the feeling of knowing that they had something together after I had had something broke my heart. It was enough. It didn't even matter that he wasn't like my number one guy. It was just the feeling of, oh my God, I was connected to both of them, and now they're connected in a way that I'm not a part of. And I just felt so hurt by that.
Oh my God. You just broke my heart putting it that way.
Oh no. Oh man. Oh, here's one that actually, this is a nice segue because you talked about watching Rock and Roll High School. Scott C. wants to know, he had two good questions. One was, what is the biggest lie you told? And the other one was, which Ramon brother would you marry?
Oh, well, okay. I would probably marry Johnny Ramone now that I've read his book. Mm-hmm. Even though he's conservative and I'm not really conservative, I just kind of like the black and white way he looks at things. And I feel like if we're talking marriage, which by the way, I do not believe in.
We should put that into better Kirkman context and say, who would you hook up with and be with for a little while?
Yeah, let's say my permanent. But if I had marriage, he fits this, my idea of it. Like,
yeah.
And I was married and but I'm saying like my new idea of it, which is it's not for me. So I think of it in a very limited way that seems to fit with Johnny. Like, you're my wife. We do this. I'm saving lots of money. I'm buying a Cadillac like that. He sounds good. Like,
of that family, I guess that's a conservative PC we're talking about.
Yeah.
If you're looking at that family.
Yeah. Well,
that's a tough choice.
But also like Joey too, like he's OCD and that's not appealing to me, but he would be my number one just because emotionally he's just so sweet. And I liked Dee Dee, but he's a drug addict. I mean, everyone's dead, but I'm just saying if everyone was left, but
I guess I'm imagining. Yeah. I guess that was my point is I imagine if they had all lived that Johnny would be alive in a way that made it possible to sort of have a partnership in a way that I don't know that it would be true for the other brothers.
Yeah. I think you're right.
To be present to it in some kind of a way that made any kind of sense at all.
But the biggest lie ever told, I told this story once on Paul's podcast, so I'll just tell it quickly and really differently. It was when I was hanging out with that kid, Rod, I went out with my friends, Sarah and Shauna, and we were driving around, and our intention was to pick up Rod and go hang out with him. And they had one, and I really didn't drink. I thought I was straight edge, whatever that meant, but I didn't like straight edge music. But I think I was like, well, I probably am going to get in trouble if I drink and do drugs anyway, so I'll just make it like a thing. You know what I mean? Right. So it's cool. And so I was like, oh, I'm straight edge. And so, but they had a bottle of wine. They didn't even really drink that much, but I think they were going to maybe open it in the woods or whatever. So Rod jumps in the car. And we all drive around, but like Sarah stops paying attention. We get in a head-on collision in the middle of town.
Oh, God.
My dad had a police scanner, so anytime something would happen, he would hear about it. So within seconds, the police come. I know that my dad is listening to it on the scanner.
Oh.
No matter what, he would just go drive to whatever the scene was.
So he was just interested in...
And all his brothers were cops and all his...
Oh, okay.
A lot of the golf club that my dad worked at was like working class people's golf club. So it was, most of the members were cops and plumbers. So he was like friends with all the cops. So he would just like show up and, hey, it's me, Ron, hanging out. So I was like, I know my dad is on his way. And then we're like, Rod, get the wine out of the car before the cops like come. So Rod grabbed the bottle and they nabbed him when he was getting out. And then he got arrested in front of me, and then I just ran out of the car and stood on the corner and pretended I wasn't even there. But my friend had gone, like, she had her head on the windshield. She didn't go through it, but she had like a bloody head. And so I just lied and said I wasn't with them, and I kept that lie up. Like, when my dad came to the scene of the crime, I was like, no, I was just on the corner. Like, he was just like, but I know you were supposed to be with them tonight. And I was like, I was, and then I decided to leave, and it was weird. I just totally lied. And I lied to their parent. I just lied to everybody about everything. It was a horrible lie. I mean, I guess it's not that bad when I think about it, but.
And the two people that were in the car, or the three people?
Three other girls, and him and me.
Everybody just kind of went along with what you said?
Well, they hated me, but yeah, they didn't. No, they were like, no, she's lying. And I was like, no, I'm not. It was just, and then I did end up getting in trouble. And I think the only other lie I told after that was like, I just smoked all through my teen years and just kept pretending I didn't. It was blatantly, my dad would just.
I know, it's like the hardest smell.
He would just hand me my cigarettes. Yeah, and be like, these are yours. And I'm like, no, they're not.
I love that. I mean, that's terrible that he smoked, but that's a good story. And what did you do when you skipped class? Zach Cody wants to know.
What? I did not skip class ever. I was like the biggest goody two shoes. I only was like, I mean, I never skipped class. That's not even a thing I would do. I remember my friends one day were like, let's skip class and drive to New York City and have coffee in a diner and then drive back. So they left at like 11.
Classic.
And they got there at like 3, they'd coffee, and then they got back at like 7. But I had lessons every single day after school. I was accounted for every second. So
what were the lessons?
Jazz, tap, ballet, and point, and then piano. And then I was in the musicals and in the plays.
Okay.
And in like poetry club. I mean, it was just nonstop crap. So I was, you know, Monday through Friday, busy, never had free time. I'm realizing now I'm still like that. But it was like, my parents were like, you can be as weird as you want, but you have to have some skills to back it up. So do like things. Like, you can't just sit at Friendlies.
Like, you need to have the skill of tap dancing.
Yeah. Like, you can't just sit at Friendlies with the other weirdos. Oh, and then there was band practice eventually. So
yeah,
I'm glad they did that, because the other people I knew that were weirdos, like, their lives are great and stuff like that, but they didn't go into the arts. And so maybe I wouldn't have either. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's not true. I always wanted to. That I just made that up. But, I never skipped class.
Never skipped class.
No.
I guess I did. And I'm not sure why I did, because my dad was a teacher at the school. So he would always find out about it.
The only thing bad I did was smoke on the school grounds. And my sociology teacher found me, and she had shown James Dean's East of Eden in class. And we both had a crush on him. And when she found me smoking outside, she was like, I'm not going to tell the principal because James Dean used to smoke and we both like him. And it was like this weird thing
together.
And she was like, I know you're just going through like a little phase and you know, it's okay. Just don't do it near the school again. I was like, okay.
I've just looked down and Chelsea Eichholz's question caught my eye, because I'm wondering if maybe the lying about the car accident could fall under this category. But if there's anything else, she wants to know, do you have any moments that you look back on and say, what in the hell was I thinking?
God, no. I don't. Like, no. Like, just in general, what was I thinking being so... I guess... Okay, yeah. I guess in general, once I did get boobs and stuff, like, then I started to, like, ugly myself up and, like, wear baggy clothes and the flannel shirts and look just like I was always getting sent to the principal's office because I was always falling asleep in class. I didn't realize I had like maybe anxiety or ADD or whatever. So I couldn't sleep at night. I was always up all night, like super manic and like writing and just being a weirdo. And then I would sleep like 2 hours and I'd fall asleep in class. So they thought, all my teachers thought I was on drugs.
I mean, you didn't have the energy to skip class.
No, I couldn't even do any. I would just sleep through class. Yeah. And so I kept getting sent to the principal and they thought I was on drugs and stuff. And I was like, no, I'm just really tired. And so that was just me. It was like tired, hair in my face, looking gross. Like, what was I thinking? I probably had like a beautiful teenage body, right, that was like skinny and no cellulite and perfect. And why wasn't I just like, not like a hoochie slut,
but like celebrating it in some way, like, whatever that would have meant for
why
you.
Why wasn't I dressing like the lady from Do Light or whatever? Like, right. Why didn't I like, yeah, like why wasn't I more sexual? I mean, I was, but like, why wasn't I just like, why didn't I sleep around? I don't know. Just like that kind of thing. Like what the hell was I thinking?
It's great.
And also, what the hell was I thinking that I had to be this beautiful, perfect thing for boys to like me? Like, they're boys. They like girls. Like, what was I thinking? Yeah. I wasted so much time thinking I wasn't good enough and thinking that they would never like me when they probably did, you know, like that kind of
thing. That's a great answer. That actually feeds in possibly a little bit to Fish's question. What advice would you give your teenage self as your current self?
Honestly, I think the who I was as a teenager is more interesting and better than who I am now. Like, she read voraciously, like she did so many different things. She was so fearless. And I swear to you, I would ask her for advice now. Like, I
love that.
I really, the only advice I would give is just like, probably don't smoke. It's going to screw you up later. But yeah. Oh, I also was like a little neurotic and had some anxiety, like fear of flying and stuff. So I would just say, just don't. I would give her everything that I know now about like all that kind of stuff. Like, go to therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, just like, please, you don't have to be. You like weird people and you admire them for their weirdness. So maybe someone would like you too. Like, yeah, exactly what I just said. Like, yeah. don't Don't sit in your fucking room.
Yeah. I love that you're answering these questions and then I'm asking them after the fact. Here's one you just answered. Could you answer it again?
I think it's all blanket. All I did as a teenager when I wasn't at my lessons was sit in my room. Get out of your room for 10 minutes. Nothing's going on in there.
Nothing's going on in there. Well, somebody had a seventh grade question that I accidentally skipped ahead to.
Oh, God.
That I actually should have probably asked first. And it's Compliment Pig, which, by the way, is just a great handle. So
that's a funny.
Bravo to you, Compliment Pig. In seventh grade, what was your favorite after school activity? We know you had lots of after school activities. So
yeah, it was probably just tap class, jazz class.
Can you teach me how to tap dance? Because I always kind of wanted to know and I've taken some cursory lessons.
But. Well, I can teach you like basics, but I actually, when I moved to New York, I started taking tap again. And then they were like, you're not tapping correctly. You're doing like the marked, like simple version of every step. Like my teacher never really taught me, it turns out, like complex things. So I'm still learning too in a weird way, even though I took it for like 15 years.
Yeah.
But I think my favorite after school activity was jazz dance class, and then if it wasn't that, it was probably lip syncing in front of my mirror.
Yeah,
I mean that's really all what it was all about. And if no one was home, then singing.
Great.
And, yeah,
that's a great answer. Great answer. I'm just looking to see what feels like a good natural segue. Well, I like Chris P's question because because you've already answered it. I like Chris P's question because it takes us back to kind of what you said earlier about kind of having the bands that you loved and feeling like you didn't really care too much about the negative stuff in high school. He says, as a teen, did you feel your future possibilities were constrained in any way?
No. I knew exactly what I was going to do. To me, the only thing that was hindering my future was that I had to sit through being in high school when I already felt like I had it all figured out. And I'm like,
marking time.
Yeah. Like just marking time. Like, listen, I know I have to get good grades cause it's like a thing and this is the pattern of how it goes, but I'm going to keep reading. I like that shit. I'm going to be an actor or a dancer or something or in a band or whatever. So can I just get to New York City? Like, when is it time to go to New York City? Like, that's all I was thinking. And I was like, that's just where I'm going. And no. And I did everything in high school that I would be doing now, you know, like everything I did was like, oh, this is what I want to do when I grow up. So I'm doing it now because that's it's great. Who I am. So I really feel like the only hindrance was just that I was a teenager and couldn't just leave.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
I mean, I guess I could, but
what did your band sound like and what was the name of it?
They were horrible. It was a band. Actually, this guy, Luke, I know is the lead singer, and it was, when he was the singer, it was more of like a Chili Pepper sounding band, but they did not like that. And then when I came in, I tried to make it more of like a Breeders sounding band or whatever. But it was four people playing four different kinds of music. It was me trying to, it was like me trying to sing like a mix of Kim Deal, Robert Plant, and I don't even know what else. And then like my friend playing like heavy, heavy Pearl Jam style drums. And then like my friend soloing crazy on the guitar. And then my friend who was just like sort of a bass player. So it was like,
do you have copies? Like, do you have?
Yeah, I have tapes. We were called 17, which is a great name, I think. But
I mean, I think I can speak for everyone listening to this episode. I would kill if I could somehow get a sample of a track, even if it sounded like complete shit.
Well, I have a rehearsal
podcast.
I have a rehearsal stuff and it's on a cassette and I can put it in my Walkman, which I have, and I can voice memo it and send it. I mean, I can get it
if
to you.
I know you're super busy, but if you're willing to
I'll do
that,
it today.
I
have writing to do today.
That.
So that's what I'll do today.
Because
I need to, you know.
Good. I'll give you another task to avoid writing. Fantastic. We are very similar.
But
in that
we
way.
Played at the,
were you called? Did you say
17? We played
yes,
at the VFW hall in our town and people came and like danced and my parents were so angry because I was screaming so loud. And then we played in the high school auditorium and we smashed instruments on stage and broke stuff. And we got in trouble, but it was so exciting.
Oh.
I mean, it was like,
you went for it.
Yeah. It was so,
instruments is a big, that's a
I
big
mean,
deal.
I wasn't cause I didn't have one, but yeah. You know, helping the others with theirs, like so embarrassing, but I mean, it's you're 16.
It's, oh, it's wonderful.
Who
it's
wouldn't want to, you know,
Now, time traveling Martin Luther King asked how many times did you visit the Freedom Trail before you turned 20?
Gotta say,
listen, it's an honest answer.
I did eventually, but it was never a field trip. Needham school system was more about aquariums and
maybe the occasional planetarium. Some,
yeah. No, sorry.
Sorry, time traveling Martin Luther King. He's probably already traveled to some other time.
Yeah, he doesn't
care.
He
isn't even listening to the answer. And what about, let's see, some of these are more general, so they might have kind of been answered. You know, Lloyd Dobler has a fun one. He wanted to know.
Oh, that's a girl. She's pretty awesome.
Hey, Lloyd Dobler, the girl. I know with some of my followers, I know more about them, but she would like to know what your favorite curse word was as a teen. And then she also had the great question of a song that best defines your teens. And that definitely falls in line with everything we've been talking about.
Oh God. Favorite curse word probably was fuck. I still love that word.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine. Yeah, it had to be fuck. Oh God,
obviously
a
tough question to pick one.
Like
song,
to pick one song,
but
I don't know. Like, probably. I'm gonna say for me personally, probably the Smiths. On Louder Than Bombs, there's like a couple songs. Either Sheila, Take a Bow.
Nice.
Don't go home tonight. Come out and find the one you love and who loves you. Throw your homework onto the fire. I mean, I think it's like, that's got to be like.
It's pretty on the nose.
It's pretty
it's
on
perfect.
The nose.
That's,
yeah.
Why wouldn't it be?
Yeah. I think it's something to that effect.
Interesting. Yeah. That's a great question. And it's, you know, to be honest with you, that's a question I wish I would have given you in advance, because it's one that's like fun to kind of pore over and sort of really take a time to think. Like, you just came up with a knockout answer.
Well, I think I really, because it really is true. And I think William, It Was Really Nothing, which is a Smith song, really defines.
I love that song.
Yeah, just like it would be like, it taught me how to think like, oh, this woman, she wants a ring and there's these boring people getting married and, you know. There's another song he has about like getting on the train and leaving. I don't know, any kind of song where it's like I'm leaving or I'm judging others for being boring and married, right, and staying in the town. Like, right, anything like that defined the obnoxious teenager I was becoming, where, yeah, I wasn't doing anything except being a teenager and living off my parents. But oh man, did I have it all figured out? And was I such a condescending, yeah, dick? So I think any song about that.
God, that's great. I cannot think, not that I was asked, but I cannot think of the only thing that popped into my mind that I can't account for, other than probably just that I just loved it all 4 years of high school. Loved it. Was Birthday by the Sugar Cubes.
Oh, yes.
Like, just in terms of Bjork's voice, and like, that's, you know, the, yes, song was like, it was just strange and
that's
and
a
euphoric
great song.
And
I can hear it in my head. I can't sing it. Yeah, that's
she just,
an
that
awesome
was like
song.
When, that was one of the first songs where you when you heard the Sugar Cubes, it was like, what is happening right
you
now?
I mean, I wish there was a picture of this dog and cat. Beautifulness. Yeah, that's an amazing,
like,
song.
Just like, who is this girl and how is she singing like this? And
I forgot about, you know, the Sugar, mean, Cubes. Oh. I completely forgot.
Yeah, but you know, I
don't
know.
Go download that later.
I don't know that the lyrics are particularly appropriate, but I mean, for, you know, I don't know that they represent, yeah, anything, but that's just the feeling of that song was like really, really cool.
I feel like a lot of my followers maybe think I was like sad in high school or something, or picked on, but I was a condescending asshole. Like, I was not suffering anything except romantic stuff, but in general, I was a nice person and I think I was kind of funny, but in my head, I was a complete judgmental asshole. I mean, my diary is just a series of tearing my friends apart.
Oh, no.
Like, anything they did, everything. Oh, you normal people. I mean, I was awful. So like, that is.
We might have to do like a part two. To,
yeah,
this,
we'll
podcast,
have to do a part two sometime.
Some from our journals.
Oh, yes.
In fact, I thought that, and then I thought I can't do that and do the listener yeah, questions. But I thought it would be really funny if we each read from the exact same day and exact same year.
Oh, that
would
be great.
Just a day from our journals, because I have all of mine too. So we'll do, this is like, clearly there's so much to unpack about being a teenager between you and me that,
yeah,
we'll probably have to do another episode at some point. Kristen Ann, a nice general question. What was your most memorable moment in high school, if you have one? And then also Cassidy Alice asked best memory from growing up. So those are kind of twin questions.
I mean, my first kiss, how can that not be your best memory ever?
Nice.
And then I think my favorite moment from high school was when I was in the school musical and my French teacher, Mr. Burgess, who I really looked up to, he was a really weird dude and he really just did not have time for kids that were not weird. And he wrote me a note that was like, if you stay in this town one day longer than you have to, I will be so disappointed in you. Wow. You have a passion and a talent and you need to leave. And I want you to go to New York and just go be there. And just, you don't have to have a plan. Just go.
Mr. Burgess, it was that is awesome.
He just slipped me a card one day on the last day of school as I was walking out. And it was the most wonderful thing anyone's ever done.
That's amazing. Guys, we can't all have that. And my piece of advice to you would be like, if you don't have that from someone, don't be afraid to write that letter to yourself.
Oh,
what do you think
yes.
about that? Mr. Burgess, that's very, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Gabe M. Asked, what was your favorite thing to learn about in school or out? Of course, he reminded us that he was fascinated by World War II at the time.
I liked history. I had a really cool teacher who was like, I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know why I'm teaching you this history right now and the Iraq War is starting. And I want to talk to you about what similarities it has to other buildups and like political, like history was no more to me because of him, just dates. I saw patterns and like the way politics works. Great. And like, yeah, so that became my favorite thing to learn. But unfortunately, that started like my junior, senior year. So
I feel the same way as you, by the way, about who I was as a teenager. I just kind of miss, like, I never thought I would miss having to go and study different subjects. But there's part of me now that feels like, God, I was just better versed with everything, not just current events, but literature, everything, all the stuff that you're studying in school that you're like, oh, why am I paying attention to this now? Now I think like I would be a more well-rounded person if I was exposed to all of that information on a daily basis. Like it's hard to argue.
I'd love to just like take classes all day.
Joe Stando wants to know what your senior prom was like, if you went.
Which I did. Yeah. I went in a station wagon with my friend and pretended not to like this guy. And yeah. I thought I was wearing a very classically beautiful dress, like wasn't trying to punk it up, but I just thought I look very classy in my black mermaid fitted dress.
Oh, okay.
Some weird thing.
Love to see.
I think I do. I think I was trying for like a, like it was like punk by day, like maybe a little like Judy Garland by night. Like, okay. I don't know what I was trying to do. I'll send you a picture of that. I think I have one.
I wore
black
vintage
gloves.
I wore a vintage sort of, now that I look back on it, like really? It was like, it was vintage. So I'm very proud of that.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful dress, but it was basically the color of my flesh. So it was sort of like, made me look really washed out and awful. But then like the touches that I added were so terrible, like a black velvet, just like a ribbon around my neck.
Oh, sure. Black velvet.
Some black gloves and some black shoes just to make it a little edgy.
That sounds like my dream outfit in the 90s. Black, sure. Black ribbon around my neck. Yeah.
I'll see if I can cough up.
I think I had a cigarette holder.
Oh, that's
embarrassing.
Come on. But that's so like Oscar Wilde.
So stupid.
Those little Victorian touches that just seem like that sort of fall into like a weird punk, like, you know, we sort of what's the word I'm looking for? You when you take something on
appropriated.
Thank you. Hello. That guy had some lovely, very specific questions, including ones that are sort of culturally significant at the time and politically significant. He wanted to know what your stance was on trickle-down economics, mm-hmm. if you remember.
I didn't know anything about it, so no.
Cross that out. Growing Pains, the show.
Loved it. Had a crush on Boner, not Kirk Cameron. Thought his hair was weird.
We love our Andrew. We love our Andrew Koenig. I never saw that show.
Oh,
somehow
really?
I never saw it. I watched Family Ties. And I think I felt like I had to choose between the two.
Oh, no, you didn't. You could have both. You could have both.
I did also watch Silver Spoons.
Oh, Jason Bateman was so fucking hot on that show. It's unbelievable.
He was so smug. And
yes.
So sexy.
I know. Why would you ever like Rick Schroeder?
You wouldn't. Ugh. You just wouldn't. I might have liked the dad for a little while. I had some
total
confusing feelings about men my father's age all through childhood.
Total hot dad.
And Tears for Fears.
What he wants to know what I think of Tears for Fears.
Tears for Fears.
They don't even register in my brain. I maybe know one song. Don't care.
Yeah. Sorry, that guy.
Sorry, that guy.
Desert Storm.
Oh, I was very affected by that. I was so naive. I thought like everything was going to turn
teacher,
into...
You said your teacher.
Yeah. He got it. Well, yeah. I think there was like a couple of weeks before he started addressing it that I thought somehow it'd end up in nuclear war. But I was very like peace hippie. I just suddenly became this weird hippie and I started wearing two watches. One was set to Iraq time. But so... Janet's on the floor.
That is awesome.
So I could always think about the soldiers dying.
I shouldn't be laughing. It's wonderful.
No,
it's a wonderful idea.
It's so I took it on like it was like so painful for me. I mean, I was just in so much pain about it.
I love it.
I was such an open, bleeding heart sore of, I don't know what.
I can't
what.
Believe how much I just laughed at that one. I think it's a lovely sentiment.
But it's just so.
I just wasn't expecting
it.
It's
so teenagery. Yeah.
I know. I love that. Oh my God.
Oh, I was very upset by it.
I love that. That to me right there answers my final question, which is a nice, open question. We've spoken for an hour and 10 minutes, so I'm going to have to wrap it up. But Manda Jean says, just how cool were you?
Oh, I thought I was the coolest person that ever lived.
Yeah.
I'm looking back, I probably wasn't that cool. I mean, I was into poetry and dancing and I probably was not that cool.
I'm fairly certain we would have gotten along.
Oh, yeah. Well. You would have been totally rolling.
Yeah.
With my crew.
Yeah.
My crew.
I think you were pretty cool. I don't know. It all sounds good.
I was only tormented by the world. I had no time to be tormented by other teenagers. That seemed absurd to me to care what other people were thinking or doing.
And you had also gone through that already when you were younger.
Yeah. Like, fifth, sixth, seventh grade was when people were mean. And I was like, well, I don't like people that don't like me. So goodbye.
Yeah.
But then I never learned how to translate that into romance. Then, then I only liked people that didn't like me. But yeah, no, I don't know. I thought I was very cool. It's up to someone else to decide.
It's up
to
God. Just kidding.
It's up to God to decide. I'll find out.
Weird. Listen, that's what I'm going to find out. That's the number one question I'll ask at those pearly gates. What if at the end of the podcast
we found out
you were a huge traditionalist and like a Bible thumper? And in the end, we found out that Jen Kirkman believes that St. Peter will open up the golden gates.
And he'll tell me if I'm, but it's like a weird thing where he tells you if you're cool or not.
And it is only based on how you were as a teenager.
Yeah.
It's absolutely not.
Sorry, you have to go to hell. You weren't cool.
You know what? This is all you would have to do. You would arrive at the pearly gates. You would be like, give me a sec. And you would reach into your pocket and you would uncrumple the letter that Mr. Burgess wrote you.
That's
right.
And they
would be like, and then the gates would just open wide.
I remember the card had a crazy dog on it and he goes, I picked this card because it's so stupid, but it was like a birthday card, but it wasn't my birthday. It was like the first time I'd seen that done.
Oh my God, totally. I had a friend who did that and he blew my mind in high school. I was like, he would give me like the, like a card in Spanish that was like, I'm so sorry for your loss in Spanish and give that to me for my birthday. And I was like, I'm going to marry you.
Those are the milestones that nobody talks about, that they keep making these TV shows about what happened at the prom. That it's weird things like that, that are the milestones.
Oh, this was great, Jen. Oh my God.
I know. Oh my God. You have somewhere to be. Let's get you out of here.
Oh, I guess get me out of here. thank you so much for doing the podcast, guys. I hope you enjoyed the listener generated questions. That was a joy. I'm definitely having her back on the show. Leave your feedback on various things, including iTunes, if you can. I feel like I should come up with a fun, cheeky song about leaving iTunes feedback because people are so tired of being asked to do that by every single podcast that I want to try to find a way to make it fun. So I'll work on that for next time. Guys, see you next time on the podcast. As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.